You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what the Chris Spangle Show is about. Get it at wearelibertarians.com or on iTunes.
My name's Creighton. Anybody who's here because it's a wall event probably knows who I am, unless you just started following it like yesterday, because I am one of the more important people involved with this because I helped found it. I'm actually probably as important as Chris, or maybe more important because I'm cooler. Okay, so they wanted me to come up here and tell jokes, but I'm really not that funny, so I guess I'll tell a story that I'm sure all of you guys have heard, which is the time, and I don't see him here, Chris Galt, no, I don't see him, when Chris Galt tried to fight me. This is, everything that you're about to hear is 100% true. So we started this podcast, what is it, like 2012? And I was involved with Young Americans for Liberty at IUPUI, and so was Chris Galt, and he knew Spangle from being involved with the LP, so we all got together and decided we were going to have a podcast where we basically just talked about current events, and apparently that's still what happens. I'm just not there anymore because this is what happens when you mute the Facebook group notifications, because they talk all the time. All the time. It never stops. So I mute it, and next thing you know, I'm not on the podcast anymore. So we have this event, or we have this podcast, and, you know, this is like a couple months in. We haven't really done too many of these. But the topic was FEMA camps, of all the things to get polarized over and get upset about. And The episode, you can go back and listen, it's probably one of our worst, is just me and Chris Galt yelling at each other for about an hour, maybe 2 hours. And no one knows, they just hear it through, maybe indirectly, through Spangle and others, about what happened after the episode was over, because it didn't stop. If you guys go back to listen to the episode, we yelled at each other for 2 hours, and then we continue yelling at each other after the microphone's off. And Chris gets up and starts yelling in my face. And this is, a lot of this was personal. It had to do with an event that that was hosted at IUPUI, which I'm sure if Chris was here, he would probably say something smart-ass anyway and still be hurt by it. But we started yelling, and I kid you not, and I'm going to try and recreate exactly what happened, because I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm more or less yelling at Chris Galt right in his face, and he's yelling back at me, of course. And this is real time. This is not slowed down for viewer, so you can dissect any kind of meaning out of it. This is real time, real speed at what happened. So imagine my back to you, and I am Chris Galt, and we see something like this. And I stop him and then tackle him, and
I'll be Galt, you be you.
Oh, okay.
This is the exact speed of the punch. He was bigger than this back then. You've lost a little weight.
Look at I haven't, but okay.
Uh-oh!
He's not kidding. That's exactly what happened. And I proceeded to tackle him and put him in a headlock and stuff. And Chris Galt, I'm sure if you were here, you'd be really upset by it. But that's what happens when you don't show up. They put me on stage to make fun of you. So I guess that's really all I have. I did not even know I was going to do this on the way up here. So without further ado, the men of the hour, the We Are Libertarians cast, Chris Spangle, Joe Ruiz, and Greg Lenz, for your enjoyment.
Thank you, Creighton. What he left out of the story is the afterwards, where he's on the ground and he's got Galt in a headlock. And Galt is flailing like this,
not hitting anything, and Creighton screaming, don't hit me, don't you hit me, don't you hit me. And I go, listen, if you don't let him up, I'm going to have to sit on you. If I let him up, he's going to hit me. Galt, don't hit him, or I'm going to sit on you. And they both somehow agreed to that because I was 330 pounds at that point. Oh, I was sitting down, watching. Yeah, I let them fight it out.
And you're still a libertarian.
Yeah. It's like cats. You just let them go. They're young libertarians. They've got to violate the NAP every once in a while.
Oh.
So
I'm glad he took he put on his weird libertarians t-shirt because he looked like a patriotic Where's Waldo, you know.
All right, welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. To my left is Greg Lenz.
Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. To my right is Joe Ruiz.
How's it going?
Fresh down from South Bend.
South Beezy.
We Are Libertarians is a podcast that talks about current events in a fun, intelligent, and some would say humorous way.
Well, let's not be presumptive.
Right. So this is our live show. This is the last time, if you are listening in our feed, this is the last time that you can hear the live show for free. That's right. This is the last time. So many of you may not have heard, you might not have downloaded. We are getting ready to start a subscription service. Greg and I will start doing an extra show a week.
Yeah, did we ever decide on a name?
Two Dudes, One Mic.
But that's taken.
I don't give a shit.
Okay.
It's my IP now,
It's intellectual property, and we don't respect that.
Yeah. It's a free market. We're going to
pass a law, bro.
We're going to homestead it and make it better. you should see the artwork, by the way.
Oh, God.
It's just a mic.
Who's like, pooping?
It's a mic like this, and then you and I are squatting over it. I had
Who made this?
I had Aaron snap a photo in your sleep at the LPIN convention.
Oh, God.
He and Tyler set you up.
That's the one?
So the graphic artist guy, PJ Yinger, God bless him, does all this artwork for free. He did an amazing piece of art today for an activism podcast that we're going to have coming out.
We do?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Activism.
Yes.
By podcasting.
It's like you're hearing about all this for the first time.
It is. This is great news.
I have many plans, of which I'm not going to ask you guys to do anything.
This doesn't sound democratic at all.
No.
I picture that guy from Napoleon Dynamite. I guess you could say things are getting pretty serious.
Oh, yeah.
So in order to fund all this new stuff, we're going to have a subscription service, and there will be more on that once I get the time to build it here in the next week or so.
Nice.
He didn't know what Two Girls, One Cup was. So, Joe... And this
Grace's dad didn't know what Two Girls, One Cup was.
And so Joe can verify. Imagine the first time you saw Two Girls, One Cup. Think in your mind. Just go back into your memory right now and think back.
Raise your hand if you've seen it. At least you got some honest people.
First viewing.
Thanks, Dorn.
Joe, don't go look that up. PJ Yinger is a graphic artist. He's done art for the Bob and Tom Show for 30 years. Did PJ flinch at all?
Not a second. And if you want proof of that, what they don't know is that I was actually filming them watching Two Girls, One Cup. So I'll show you my Snap story after the event if you want to see it.
Were you really?
Yeah, it's just you and PJ staring at the monitors, just very, very docilely looking at porn.
Yeah, when you work for the Bob and Tom Show for 3 years, let alone 30, you've seen a lot of stuff.
I got a couple good ones.
So, yeah, how was your weekend, Greg? How's things as a kept man?
Excuse me?
Yeah, you know, Mr. Lindsay H.
Oh, yeah, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. You've been distant.
I've been cold and distant I don't know.
It's flipped because I've become single Spangle. It's Spangle Single Awareness
Who
Month.
Said woo? I like single Spangle so much better than couple Spangle.
Why?
Because you exist. And you exist in more than just a Spangle shell with a bitchly inner side.
Are you saying that I was grumpy?
No, I'm saying you were bitchly. Is the difference.
Bitchly?
Would you say
bitchly?
Hormonal?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe hormonal?
Very sensitive, very emotional.
As opposed to now?
Now you're... Callous and brutal. You're productive. I'll give you that. And my wife, she said, wow, I'm seeing all the stuff Chris is doing with We Are Libertarians on Facebook and SoundCloud and everywhere else. And why does he get so productive when he's single?
It's because I'm desperately running from the pain. That's why.
Still bitchly, I take it back.
Nothing says mental health like escaping.
Yes. Aaron, come up here. Yeah, it is. You get really busy because if you stay busy, then you don't think about all your emotions.
No time for feels.
No. And you've disappeared on us. You're just having the time of your life being in love.
You're so quiet.
I am not so quiet.
You're so quiet.
I am on the road a lot. I'm on the road a lot. No, I am happy, but I'm in my focus time. I mean, you guys have Wall under control. I'm trying to contribute where I can. You know, I feel like my Trump support is distant. You know, I'm the guy that you don't want to claim.
Yeah.
Which is a recurring theme in my life, so we're all right.
Aaron and I brought Single Spangle out to Broad Ripple on Saturday night.
It was embarrassing.
Is the mic on? You also talk very quietly.
No, I don't. It's on now. Yeah, we went out to Broad Ripple, and Spangle was very sweaty.
Embarrassing was the word that you used?
Embarrassingly sweaty.
I also was wearing my Don't Tread on Me t-shirt.
He was.
Oh my God. I got like...
to the club.
The one libertarian in the crowd just went, yes! So now I know I done messed up. So
you wore a Don't Tread on Me?
And he danced the night away with three women. It's completely confusing all the men at the club.
Usually gay guys aren't libertarians.
Oh, he had a few of those.
I got so many pounds, you know, like, yeah, man, love the t-shirt, right on. I'm a huge Trump supporter. I'm like, I got to burn this.
You got to go. A couple bro hugs,
yeah.
Sweaty?
Oh, I was very sweaty. We went to Casbah.
Hot there.
Rock the Casbah.
Casbah is
three hours of dancing,
and I dance. I jiggled to the left.
Oh, wow.
I have video.
I want to thank you for the video updates.
How good of a dancer am I?
Oh, he did well.
Really?
And you knew the words to all the famous rap songs.
I know all the rap words. I know all the best rap words. Some of them I can't say right now. But we walked in, and it is... Well, it's more ethnic than...
Why did you look at Joe?
Because he's the director of minority outreach.
No, I am.
Oh, you are?
Well, yeah. Who else would it be?
I don't know, the ethnic guy?
Are you saying that I'm not ethnic?
You are a little swarthy.
I'm swarthy.
Yeah.
Cherokee is a minority. It wasn't until Andrew Jackson, but now it is.
We walk in with one of my best friends, Christine. She's a tall woman. Yeah. She was wearing heels. She was 6'4 in those heels.
At least.
That is not a joke.
She's a strong black woman.
A strong black woman. Aggressive.
Who you've been trying to convince to marry?
She's been trying to convince me to marry her, sir.
Is that the truth?
But I can't be tamed because I'm a bad boy. All right? And so we start dancing, and aggressively dancing, as I like to call it.
Would you say grinding?
This is a family podcast.
He was
so we almost started one.
With his grinding.
I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and grind.
Yeah, and so I look over and there's like three or four African American gentlemen looking at the two of us and dying laughing.
Why do you think that was?
I think they just had never seen a white boy with such good moves.
You think it was the swag?
I think it was.
You forgot to turn it off, didn't you?
There was too much of a alpha male. Is that what is the term? Yeah,
okay.
It's too alpha. And so I dance.
Your pheromones were just taking over the club.
It was just filled with Spangle pheromones
everywhere.
I was spraying like a skunk. My pheromones.
Were women
everywhere.
Coming up and saying, "Oh my God, I love Ron Paul."
Yeah, they pretty much had to follow him around with a mop bucket.
Oh,
all night.
I wasn't sweating that bad.
Was it
no,
the women?
The women.
Okay, yeah, that's
dancing with you.
I like his first instinct was himself and defend himself.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sweating that bad.
I was sweating that bad.
It had nothing to do with the women's panties.
It was very hot in there. And so I start, and there's like this group of like nerdy white guys in the back of the club, and they're kind of watching us, and I see them looking at one of the girls we were with. The guy kind of wanted to talk to her. Aaron, of course, was snapping the entire time.
Yes.
And so the guy made up, it was actually very smooth, made up an excuse to come up and talk to us and say, "Man, I love the Snapchats that you guys are doing. It's great. Can I dance with your girl?" It's like, oh, that's not my girl. She's totally single. Take her. You can have her. When
Aaron How much?
Yeah, when Aaron and I take girls out, we protect them. Yeah. I'm just kidding. We're not like, Creighton could punch somebody. I can run, and not that fast. So you kind of want to be with me, right? You could outrun me.
Probably.
Right. Yeah. And so so they start dancing with us, and then it's like the white corner of the club. There's like
segregated.
Yeah, there's like four.
Was it fenced in?
There's like four nerdy white guys, Aaron and I, and then our friends, and we're
the guys
dancing.
That love your Snapchats.
By the end of the night, all the other nerdy guys were dancing, and I really shouldn't have started the trend, because like by the end they were just like flailing all through the and like everybody's like, all right, we're
leaving.
Did
you tell them about the podcast?
It got really uncomfortable when they started asking for Gordon Lightfoot. So.
When we walked in, the doorman was like, Spangle, I don't need to see your ID.
What?
That is true.
The dueling piano bar, though, right?
Yeah.
I walked up to the club, and the guy said, get out of here with your ID. I know who you are. Yeah.
Was he an aspiring comedian?
No, he asks for a job at Bob and Tom every month. So,
nice.
So it's, I'm not famous. He just knows where I work.
Have you been keeping him on the line, offering an interview?
No, that's mean. I flat out tell him he's not good enough.
Oh, and he still lets you in?
No, that's a joke. That's a joke. And so we're leaving the
club. Why would you do that to Bibbert?
He doesn't work at Bob and Tom. He shows up every day, but he doesn't do any work at all.
Bibbert had one dance move all night. I think it was something like...
Yeah, it was more like this.
And he
it was
did
like
it.
Churning the butter.
He did it all night.
It was very awkward.
Yeah.
Well, he did run cross country.
So as we're leaving...
Is that why sample size?
Did you just call him sample size?
Yeah, it was our discussion that we had about him. And is Seth here?
Seth, you here?
Seth's not here tonight.
If you say Jeff Vibbert three times, Seth Nimone will appear. He will appear.
He likes Jeff because Jeff is sample sized.
He's a swing voter.
Then it's the new term.
I still haven't figured out if this was a drunk, like they were pranking us. But when we walked out, one of the guys ran up to me and looks at me and goes, "You, sir, are an inspiration."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At Casbah or at Breakers?
This is 3:30 in the morning, and he's drunk.
You did have three women dancing with you all night. And
well, some would say four.
They were all watching from the wall.
I had you dancing with me.
Oh, yeah.
Greg, did you see the videos?
I have watched the videos. I watched them all while they were happening, and I was like, it looks like it's about 130 degrees in there.
It was.
It looks like Haiti. Did Aaron make everybody go to Haiti and save children again?
Can I tell you about my favorite video from Aaron's collection?
Right.
It was the – who saw the videos, first of all? Show of hands. It was the slow song. Do you remember? Do me a favor real quick. I want you to look right at Chris Spangle for a moment. Look at Dear Leader. Take a nice snapshot of this sexy man. Do it. All right, now close your eyes, and I want you to imagine him dancing to this classic ballad. It's getting hot in here.
Was that what?
That's when I took my shirt off.
Yeah.
And did it bring all the boys to the yard?
North Carolina.
Petey Pablo.
Went full Petey Pablo. I did sing my summer anthem, Single Spangle Summer Anthem,
summer
which is...
Summer anthem is Petey Pablo?
No, is... what's the song?
I'm not sure.
It goes down in the DM.
Down in the DM, yep.
That's right.
You knew
don't you finish that. Stop right there.
Okay.
This is a family
you
show.
You know, though, have you ever seen Aaron dance?
Aaron is a great dancer.
I mean, it's borderline professional. Like, I saw Aaron take over without the pole. I saw Aaron dance at 8 Second Saloon, and no one was in there. It was ready to close, and there was a and it was Garth. It was that moment when Friends in Low Places comes on, and especially the Lost Verse version where everyone's shit-faced. Aaron goes out on the dance floor. It was your buddy Matt's, Snyder's birthday.
Birthday, yeah.
And Aaron is alone doing the cha-cha slide to Friends in Low Places, absolutely shit-faced. It was impressive because he didn't miss a beat and was able to improvise and hit it on cue.
I was having fun by myself.
Yeah, I mean, but you are a phenomenal dancer.
Thank you.
You are every like girl's favorite person to go dance with.
If you want to see a video, editor@wearelibertarians.com, I will send you the private video of Aaron dancing at a holiday party in a light-up sweater, a light-up Christmas sweater, and he doesn't know I'm watching him. It is... I mean, I think you get that fresh cut every week because you're dressing up like a police officer going out, and you're not selling crawl space repair, my friend.
He's the IP police.
Is there a... Margaret here. All right, Aaron, thank you. Aaron Ebert, everybody.
So brave.
So our first topic for the evening is going to be the Brexit. And if we're going to talk the Brexit, there's only one man that can explain the British leaving the European Union in a way that all of us can understand. It's very complex. No, I'm not talking about Greg Lenz. I'm talking about, let's give him a round of applause, Mr. James Neese.
Yeah, dog.
Take your sweet time. They don't have that many claps in them for you. No, come up here. All right, so...
Marco. Marco. The stage is so fucking crowded, dude. I swear.
Well, they're going to have karaoke afterwards.
This isn't it.
You're going to have to turn the blue mic up because homeboy over here, or as Jeff Vibbert calls him...
They call me Mumbles.
The wood nymph.
The wood nymph.
Yes. He looks like a wood nymph. You got your hair cut.
Hi, I'm looking fly. Oh, I came for the Klonopins. That's why you invited me.
I promised you $10 a Klonopin and a burrito. He declined the burrito.
You have to have standards, okay? Like, if he's like, I'll give you Klonopins, I expect the moment, like, 9 o'clock rolls out, I just fucking hit it on the pavement. Like, I'm just done. So
I'm just giving you one so you won't feel as anxious.
I'm getting 7.
Is this new?
No, that's an old tattoo. That's
a
black flag.
You have a QR code on the back of your right hand.
It's a black flag, but...
Show the people.
Oh, is it the ISIS flag?
Oh, I got Adventure Time, too. I mean, fuck out.
Punk till you puke.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, bro. And on the other hand, he's got guitar strings. When you think metal, you think James Neese.
I do.
I have a lot of memes on my arm. I got Grumpy Cat. I'm thinking about getting, like, a Dat Boy tattoo somewhere on my ass.
Here come Dat Boy.
Yeah.
For those of you, all right, I want you all to think about this as we move through the evening while James is here. James is a philosophy major. He graduated from college, right?
3.8 GPA player.
Yeah.
Don't you have credits, too, towards your PhD in philosophy?
Probably.
So James is special for one reason. One reason. James is the only philosophy major in the city of Indianapolis that has a job.
Not in philosophy.
And no.
He's not a barista.
He is in charge of IT for an entire county.
I like to keep that real. No, not yet. They got to vote me in. I'm almost there. Like, I'm dying to get it. And as soon as I control, I swear to God, I'm knocking the fucking internet out every day.
Well, hey, dog. This is recorded.
You know this is rated R when you bring me on. It's...
I know.
Plus, the county commissioners would have to get it behind the pay gate.
I know, but like Rex Bell's here, and like I feel like we have to tone it down for Rex.
I feel bad for Joe. She's like,
Rex
oh
and
my
Joe,
God,
we gotta
like filthy mouth.
Can you get it down to a PG-13 for me, dog?
This guy's in the leadership group.
Endorse Pence real quick.
Well,
he's not
Pence
Melissa.
Is all right.
So James, you had a very succinct explanation. Before we talk about that, how's your weekend? What'd you do?
Oh, man. Like, I don't lie. Like, sometimes I message Josh. Like, Josh is in the audience, and, like,
Joshua Featherstone?
It would be, like, 3 in the morning, because, like, I don't sleep. Like, you can see me posting memes at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5
a.m. When you're not banned.
I mean, like, no one's commenting. Yeah, I get banned a lot. Like, I'm 9-time banny off Facebook. I am literally the reigning champ on shit posting. Sometimes I'll talk to Josh. Sometimes I'll talk to everybody else in the audience. It just depends who's online. I see a little green dot. I'm just like, hey, what up?
James, you know? James is the reason that Creighton mutes the chat. So,
well,
yeah, but honestly, if you're in a chat with James, you mute it because it's like, bam, bam. Yes.
Hey, bro, we're going to deport the Slavs.
Right.
Fucking Slavs? They're not even real Europeans. They're like Golden Horde rejects.
What?
They're Golden Horde rejects. They're people that basically settled in this land, called their clay, and the only redeeming factor is that people in Serbia say, remove kebab. And, like, that just warms my heart every time I hear it. Like,
born too early to explore the world, what? Born too late to explore the universe.
Can you explain to me what remove...
Born in time just for the European race war.
Remove kebab?
Remove kebab. It's the emerging Islamicist in Europe.
Well, that doesn't sound funny at all. Why'd you people laugh?
Because
you people are sick.
These people are Americans. Like, come on.
They're not slobs, so okay, it's funny. Right. They're not slobs.
Right. You also have when you were on, you coined a term about Joe that has lived in infamy.
Which Joe? Oh, like the show?
You know, the one right here on the show.
I couldn't tell. I thought he was gone already. he's a parallel Mexican.
You're of what heritage?
He's so parallel. Puerto Rican. He came here earlier, and Chris ordered Mexican food for him, and I at that point, I just wanted him gone from this country. Dude. It's like... Like, he comes in here, I ask him the first thing, I'm like, are you offended by this architecture? Are you triggered? Do you need a counselor? Do you need a safe space?
You know what? Hold on, James. I want to apologize. I did. I ordered your burrito for you, and I didn't mean to misappropriate your culture. And I am
fucking
sorry.
Fucking racist.
That is a sincere apology, Joe.
Talk about white privilege.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's abusive.
I know.
I'm like Cortez.
You guys are going to make me the Puerto Rican Jesse Williams.
To be fair, when I first met Joe Reeves, I thought he was like Filipino or something. I don't know. Like, he was, like, to me, he was some kind of Asian. Then I realized he's some kind of Mexican. So, like, I swapped on his ethnicity. Originally, I just called him like Pape or something. Mm-hmm.
Pape?
Pape. I don't know.
Hello. That was French.
I don't know. I've had like a weird name for Joe every like couple months. It's just like this
what
guy.
What is a parallel Mexican?
It's any country that's parallel to Mexico, so it's just anything that's not Mexico, basically you're lesser Mexico. It's, and that's pretty hard to beat. Mexico is kind of a shithole, so.
Why do you say that?
It's just awful. Have you been to Mexico?
I try not to go shitty places.
Exactly.
I've been.
Have you?
Yeah.
Like really? Like real Mexico? Like what did you go for? Did you go
I
for
went
like,
to I went to Cancun and Chichen Itza.
Oh, you went to Cancun? I went to Mexico City. 5 kilos of blow, 3 Peruvian prostitutes. Get at me.
How much is
it
still
all makes
in
sense
you?
Now?
Yeah. How many drugs do you think you've done in your life?
How many do you think you've not done?
All right. I started when I was like 14. Like I used to get high behind a Marathon gas station in Lebanon, which was
high on
fucking
what?
Tits. Anything you can give me, like air duster, like marijuana, it don't matter.
Air duster?
Fuck, I just blew air duster.
Whippets, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you don't whip it?
No.
I got a job at Steak and Shake when I was like 17. The manager was cool. He let us drink like Keystone Light at 2 a.m. Sometime in college, I got into robo-tripping, so like that's my favorite drug of choice. I do love my lean. I keep it real in Houston, you know, the 808.
Robo-tripping?
I don't know what was just said. What did you say?
As fast as you can, you hallucinate.
Say that? Hold on.
What is robo-tripping?
Everybody let Greg talk.
I've watched this happen before. You drink a bottle of Robitussin as fast as you can, and then you hallucinate from it, right?
Yeah, like I turned from James Neese after one cup of lean into straight up like Mike Jones, 8-7. It's just like boom, like boom, boom. You hear the bass popping. It's just like, I what I'm saying
who?
Is I get blacker the moment I drink my.
You don't remember Mike Jones?
Who?
Who? Oh.
I know Mike Jones.
Mike Jones!
Come on, I went to college in like the early 2000s.
All right,
I know
so back
all
to
my,
drugs.
Yep.
Okay, back to drugs.
You remember the time you went on a trip and you went dumpster diving?
Jacksonville.
It's called Urban Survivalist.
I used to host a blog called Urban Survival. If you ever got lost in, like, say, Jacksonville with no money and with some girl that said she had money but she didn't have money, you can perform the greatest feat of survival known as, man, like, that Popeye's chicken just closed, and I knew they just threw that shit out, but I bet this chicken is still good, so I better get it before the, like, the seagulls do. So, you know, that between that, sleeping on the beach, and, like...
What did you actually eat?
It was Popeye's chicken.
Was it like a value meal or was it just like a hodgepodge
it
of what
was,
they tossed?
It was
whatever
leaving.
They tossed. It was whatever was like the bottom of the
did
bin.
Did you have, though, like a side and like, you know, an assortment of, if you will?
I think there was coleslaw, but I wasn't sure if that was coleslaw or like just someone hawked a loogie. I wasn't going to take the risk. I just got the chicken.
Tapioca pudding?
There's,
yeah,
there was coleslaw on the chicken, and that's why it's a delicacy.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, like, I survived in Jacksonville. We ended up like combing the beach for like cameras buried in the sand. We pawned it. We got back to Nashville. Once we got back to Nashville, we coasted back to Indianapolis.
How did you get from Jacksonville to Nashville? No money.
We sold a lot of stuff. It was kind of like get this pawn shop. Let's beg for change. Like go on. We sent Lauren. Like she was like this girl that went with us. The one that didn't have any money that thought she could travel for free.
But told you that she was well-financed?
Oh, yeah. She's, it's cool. We'll get drunk when we get back to Indianapolis. I'm like, I'm fucking dying in Jacksonville, player. And it's like, I ain't going to get back to Indianapolis. So, but she would go out to, like, buy, like, a Pizza Hut and beg for change, say something like, oh, man, my car broke, or, like, my daughter's dying of heat stroke, and people will give money.
What? Why is that funny? Why am I laughing? Stop.
Because guys want a white knight.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But are you saying something, Greg?
No, I'm just saying.
Don't insult me right to my face.
You're like, not a white knight.
See, are you kidding?
You dance with three women at the Cosba in a Don't Tread on Me shirt.
I mean, I just make bad decisions with that girl. I mean, it was like
she had just that girl.
She had this sick, like, Buddha tattoo in between her cleavage, you know? It's like this fucking massive-ass Buddha tattoo. And, like, I didn't care. I was drunk.
So
and,
the Brexit. Oh. So, Britain decides, can you explain the Brexit to us, James?
Brexit is basically saying the UK being like, I've had enough of this relationship, you're kind of a dick, and I'm going to leave you because I think you're kind of a dick and you're making weird rules. Essentially, Britain is now a single lady and Singapore is already in her DMs.
Okay.
All of a sudden, Britain's looking pretty good.
Right.
I mean, the pound went down to like $1.06, and like you have almost the equal exchange rate between the USD and the euro. But a lot of
when
people
when you go through a breakup, you go down a few pounds. It's natural.
Britain's like that damaged hot girl that you can convince needs you, and
right.
All of a sudden she figured it out. She doesn't need you anymore.
All of a sudden, I'm sliding in Britain DMs.
I mean. Everybody likes it. I mean, like, Scotland's breaking up with, like, Britain, too. So now you get, you know.
Uh-oh.
You think they already
younger.
Said no.
She's getting younger and hotter.
Scotland
by the day.
Said no.
Wait next year.
You think they'll do it?
No, yeah, next year they'll definitely do it.
You think that William they wanted, will finally say freedom?
They wanted to stay in the EU because Scotland has a heroin problem, and there ain't no way they're paying for that themselves. Like, let's just get that out there. I think, like, something like 40% of Scots are addicted to heroin. There's a huge NHS crisis.
Is that an accurate number?
I would assume so. They're
I
fucking
would think
Scots.
4 in 10
I'm gonna
Scottish
just go ahead and take
have
his
a heroin
I'm gonna,
addiction.
Yeah, I'm gonna take his word on the heroin.
40% seems high for an entire like ethnic
nation.
Group.
Yeah,
they're Scots. They're not people. They can't even drive right.
If it was an alcohol addiction, I'd buy it. But
that's Ireland. Each country in the UK has their own vices. Like you know, Ireland's drinking, Scotland's you know heroin, and the UK is dentist. You know, so
is what
dentist?
That's their addiction.
No, that's something they just don't use. Like,
oh.
You have fucking bad teeth. I mean, like, I dated a girl from the UK in college
Fluoride's
once.
Banned?
Yeah. No, like, she had terrible teeth, and she could chug an MD 2020 in, like, under a minute. So, fucking whatever.
What flavor of Mad Dog?
She was hoping for Buckfist, but it was, like, Tropical Blue.
Tropical Blue?
Yep.
Easiest to chug of the Mad Dog 2020.
Yes.
So, all right, so why... Give us the breakdown of the Brexit, Greg. Explain
it's
this to us.
Simple. The British people held a referendum whether or not they wanted to continue to be a part of the EU. They decided to leave, shockingly, because none of the polls showed it. And so now they invoke Article 50 of the Treaty of Lisbon,
mm-hmm.
which allow... Actually, no one's done it, so we're still figuring it out. And so they have to notify the EU that they intend to leave, and they have 2 years to broker their exit and figure out what access they'll still have to the single market from here on in. But there's a lot of different like elements to it, because this is kind of groundbreaking. You know, Greece wanted to do it, and then they were like, uh-uh. But
so
Britain's got enough weight. They can do it, and they can still sell to everybody because they dictate terms.
Let's go back, and why don't you explain what was broken? What were they conjoined? And what, I mean, monetarily, militarily,
yeah.
Like what are the various elements that Britain and the EU were joined at?
So the EU was created primarily between, it was Luxembourg, Belgium, and then I believe Holland were the initial people. And it was designed as basically an optimum currency zone. So a place where trade can be conducted freely, without tariffs, without penalties. Free trade was the ideal. A lot of it
sort of a NAFTA for Europe.
Yeah, and it was actually the same guy that came up with the idea, or is you know coined as the founder, is the same person that came up with supply side economics, Ronald Reagan's Robert Mundell.
Okay,
and so he's had quite the impact globally, but so it was created primarily to take monetary policy out of the hands of elites. So you couldn't just have hyperinflation like in the Weimar Republic, or you
sure.
couldn't have these monetary travesties which would incite war or create like a situation where the hard right like Hitler would would rise.
Right.
And so by binding the economies together, the thought was that the French and the German people would no longer war and wipe out half their populations like after World War One. What ended up happening, though, is it took some time to work out the deals, and then you have a situation where Britain no longer, I mean, they send 350 million pounds per week to Belgium, to the EU. And people just got tired of it and were like, why are we doing this? What benefits are we getting? Because our economy is so big, we'll dictate the trade terms on our own like Switzerland.
Sure.
And so the reality is they finally had enough, and it was seen as a populist uprising because the creation of the EU and then also the tide of colonial, like so the colonies having free immigration in, brought a flood of unskilled labor in.
Mm-hmm.
As well as you had new competitors in for jobs. It's sort of like here, it's the populist backlash here in the United States with Trump is the same type of fervor that's going on in Britain.
Right. So as Syrians come in and other...
Well, it's more about the wall. It's more the immigration issue. This entire thing's pinned to immigration because, you know, it's like Gary Johnson says, Americans won't do these jobs.
What but I'm saying is in Britain, the backlash is not Hispanic workers.
In Britain, it's like Somalia, it's like in Sweden over the last, what is it, the last 10 years, 1.5 million immigrants. They've had 1.5 million immigrants over the last 10 years from Somalia and other African countries. And they're, like, the problem is the rape percentage, I know this sounds terrible because it sounds like Donald Trump, but has gone up 150% in the last 10 years. And so it's an easy scapegoat. Even though you can decide, like Gary Johnson, whether or not Americans will do the job or British will do the job, it's an easy person to pin the blame on. And the fact that the upper-class white cultural elites are able to seize on the anger of the like lower-income whites, they have a united front against these individuals and build walls, deport kebab, if you will.
Well, no, their issue was, especially Sweden, was demographic displacement.
Yep.
And that has to do with, like, Sweden is, like, a country of 9 million people. And
they hit zero population growth. Yeah,
it has almost, like, a 0.87%, something really small, below 1% population growth.
The state government actually issued ads saying it's your patriotic duty to have kids.
And they give you subsidies for having children.
Serious. But the issue with that was when the imported 1.5 million was already with the already 2 million that live there, almost one-third of the population of Sweden are not native Swedes, and that's a huge demographic block. That gives people from Somalia that are used to Somali laws or people from Ukraine that are used to Ukrainian laws the ability to change Sweden's political structure based on what they've seen in their own countries.
Sure. It's one of the drawbacks of democracy is, you know, like even the Libertarian Party nationally has worries about being invaded by others.
Sure.
And so they have things like poison pills to prevent such a thing. The EU, because they had flexible immigration laws and anyone that was underneath it could get a job if they could find one in that country and come live under equal laws, they've had just massive immigration issues, but... You know, people look for someone to blame a problem on, not their own work ethic, and that's what's created this narrative.
So so the demographic shift that you're talking about, James, what's the time frame? Is it in the last decade, the last two, the last 5 years, what?
I mean, it's over, like, the last 20 years, to be honest. Yeah. But it's, like, Sweden is posed by 2050 to be one out of every two people there are not native-born Swedes. And that's an issue for if you're culturally for in favor of Sweden, because the culture of Sweden by at least 2100 will be completely eradicated. The Sweden you know with like the Vikings, the blonde hair, the blue eyes, all that sort of thing, you know, distinctly Swedish. That will be replaced by this amalgam of sorts of refugees from all over the place, from Slavic countries, from Somalia, from Libya, from Syria. So you have a situation where people fear that... It's like you guys waking up and like 99% of your like, you know, city council, your government is just hardcore far right Christian Republican. There's nothing you can do to stop that sort of legislation they're going to push through on you. So what they fear in like Sweden is, okay, we invite all these people from these third world countries that have different religious backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds. They're afraid that it's going to vote in Sharia law. And that's the whole blowback in England as well with the whole Brexit movement was we're inviting so many of these people to their schools that are like 78% Muslims. We're afraid now that they're getting elected and they're actually voting in our population that they might enact the Sharia law courts. We gave them Sharia law courts.
They already exist in London.
Yeah, there's just no power. There's no legal power. It's just more of a kangaroo court for like the ethnic minority. But they're afraid that if you let too many in because of how the democracy is set up in the UK, they can legitimize these courts where it's okay to cut off your hand if you steal.
Okay, so what does leaving the European Union do? First, let me ask this. I mean, is it xenophobia? Just being afraid of people that are different?
It's twofold. It's xenophobia. It's nostalgia for claiming for the Margaret Thatcher years where Europe was, you know, the world's changing. China is an economic powerhouse. India is an economic powerhouse. They have all right. the demographic trends on their side. And so there are these Brits that see, everyone has their own creation myth. It used to be the empire that the sun didn't set on.
Right.
Now it's an island with marginal influence in a European Union that's falling apart and trying to maintain as much influence as possible.
Right.
And so, yes, part of it is there is anger because of cultural change.
Sure.
And that's always the result. Any action has an equal and opposite reaction, and that's the danger you have to, you know, watch for. Because if change is too quick, it creates a backlash even stronger, and you actually get the opposite of what the original movement, like multiculturalism, inclusion, assimilation, mm-hmm. all these good things that bring us closer together, if change is too rapid, it gives people an enemy.
Sure.
And so this has provided the perfect scapegoat for all of Europe to say, well, they're the reason we have a problem, and that mirrors a lot of 1945, 1939.
When in reality, a lot of it is the binding together of the economic system that causes a lot of that misery. It's the same as here. It's government intervention into the markets and into our economic system that causes the misery. It's not them dad-burn Mexicans, you know?
No. I mean, it's one of those things where, yes, libertarianism, the ideal is there aren't any borders because we're one... Sure. You know, we're all inhabitants of the earth, and we want to conduct trade freely and, you know, live peacefully.
You want spontaneous order. So as freedom diminishes, freedom and liberty diminishes in one area, you want free movement to another area. You want the ability for people, as Kim Jong-un starts to rise, they have the ability to move into a South Korea so people can stay free. Because it's basically the market of human migration.
I was never in favor of open borders. Like, I'm one of the few libertarians that are not in favor of open borders.
Well, you are theoretically, you're not an application.
No, it's just when you look at economies of scale, like, there's certain economies that are really strong, but there's a lot of economies that are really bottomed out. If you open borders and you say, okay, we're going to have massive free trade, free movement wherever you're going to go, the people are going to flee from these impoverished nations that are like a clockwork rate, and that's fine. They want to like free the oppression. They want to free whatever's there. But the people that remain will be mercilessly and viciously exploited. Like, if I'm a company, I'm a Fortune 100 company, and you just opened up free trade for me to go pay people in Nicaragua 2 cents on the dollar to go do that, I will go build that factory right there.
It's like Nigeria with the resource curse, or any country that has a resource curse. Their economies never develop fully. Mm-hmm. They end up being beholden to one, like oil or diamonds.
Sure. And I believe it causes more damage to impoverished people and nations. Like, to get to the point where you can have open borders, you have to make sure every economy is on an equal scale before you can do that.
You have to reboot.
Yeah, you can't just have like these dirt poor nations and these powerful nations. These powerful nations will exploit these poor nations for all their economic worth and just drain it completely dry.
Which Britain knows that what clout they carry, and they already have their own currency. So
sure.
They look at Switzerland. Switzerland has existed outside the European Union core since it started in 1951. And so you look at it, and they just now... they're still working on finishing up all their trade deals on their own.
And they have paid an economic price. I mean, there has been a lot of inflation in Switzerland.
Because they're seen as so stable. And
right.
So people, like, when they look at an uncertain world, investors flood their dollars to Switzerland. They'll flood their money to Australia, the United States. Drives up the currency because they don't want to hold a British pound or a euro anymore. So they want cash, so it's liquid.
Right.
Pour demand into one of the other currencies that are seen as stable. Everyone living there, all of a sudden, your Happy Meal is $14.50.
Sure.
And that causes economic upheaval for the people that live there.
I just don't want to live in a world where Toblerones are $6 a pop.
And that would be cheap in Switzerland.
I can't handle it. So it is a little bit about xenophobia. It is a little bit about blaming people who are just seeking freedom.
Well, that depends, are they? If they want to implement Sharia law as their own private court system, is that a good thing for freedom or a bad thing for freedom?
Touche.
No, but I mean, seriously.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't that painting with a broad brush, though, saying, all people who have immigrated from Somalia wants Sharia law.
Oh, absolutely. And that's not true. You know, it's a small minority, but they tend to centralize power and dictate terms.
So what does leaving do for Britain? I mean, how does that stop the tide of immigration if they leave the EU?
It saves them £350 million a week they send to Belgium.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That could go towards schools, towards so many things.
£350 a week.
£350 million.
They can dictate their own policy as well.
So, and they're so strong, they can say, you know what, we're not paying your tariffs that I would usually have to pay if I were a small country in the EU.
Sure. So explain £350 million a week in English.
Okay,
in American.
$350 million per week goes to a centralized government in Belgium of which you're not a citizen.
But what is the exchange? I mean, is that like 500 in American?
The pound is $1.06.
Yep.
So it's roughly equal.
All right, so 350.
Well, prior it was like $1.46
per week to a centralized government where you feel like you're not getting that, you're dictated to.
So do you two, and I don't know how much you're up on the Brexit, you're probably learning like I am. Feel free to ask questions.
Thanks. No, but I do, it was kind of an oops moment, wasn't it?
An oops moment?
Yeah, because my understanding of it was that David Cameron, when he was up for re-election, or that he basically, the conservatives in around him were upset and they wanted him to do something, and so he basically said, okay, well, when I'm re-elected, we'll give it to the people and we'll have a vote. But he didn't actually think that
it would happen.
It would happen.
We call that a cuck.
So now, we call that a what?
A cuck.
Yeah, so now...
On the internet.
Yeah.
They're in this position where you said it would take, what, 2 years to complete the exit?
They're given 2 years to negotiate the brokering.
But it could take more, right?
But, so it's taken Switzerland 27.
And they don't even know... They don't know how this is all going to unfold.
No, because they start formal process... They notify the individuals that they're intent to leave, and then they have to get, so then they have to offer a replacement if they want to stay a part of a outside entity that allows them to trade without much penalty, because they can broker the terms of the penalty. Like right now, they would pay roughly $300. Right now, the tax of being part of the EU is roughly $350 per household, per citizen of Britain.
Sure.
As it exists right now, to join this outside European Union part is $3,500 per household. However, since they're so big, they have the ability to dictate terms. So they can negotiate a lower rate. But it's just no one's ever done this. No one's ever invoked Article 50 of the Treaty of Lisbon.
Mm-hmm. So do we feel like this is a good thing or a bad thing for Liberty?
I think it's a great thing.
It just depends how it's going to go, because it's going to be, like I said, a domino effect. It's going to send out to the far right in France, the far right in Germany, the far right in Spain.
Greece.
If the UK actually pulls off and manages to get a successful deal and boom back the pound from like $1.06 to like $1.15, $1.16, there's strong economic growth, the migration crisis is cut down in the UK. France will see that. Le Pen in France will see that. The RFD in Germany will see that. Golden Dawn. They will all see that, and they will all bolster, and everybody will fall in line with these parties. And the next person you will see leaving the EU will be France, because France was this close to having a far-right premier.
And why would Germany want to stay if they're the ones that have really been...
They'll be holding everybody up.
They've been holding everybody up already.
And their citizens are already tired of financing the debts of the other countries.
Wasn't there an article that you've posted a couple times that in Germany that like some high percentage, like double-digit figure, would want a Hitler-esque figure?
Oh, yeah. Over... it's up to now... what is it? It's 4 in 10 Germans would be open to a nationalist socialist... Hitler type figure.
4 in 10
but
would
like
be
one
open.
In 10 would actually like declare support now. The problem is though, it Mein Kampf has just recently within the last year been up for re-release. 4 new editions, all sold out.
Wow.
All sold out.
Watch your back, Joe.
What?
Is so, he Jewish?
I just don't.
Jewish,
I guess
Mexican.
You'll OD before it all goes down.
Can you explain it to me? Because I just don't get the. Like, why would Mein Kampf, why we understand that Hitler, I mean, I understand that Hitler was mentally ill. We understand the effects on humanity that he had. Why would a civilized nation want to go down that road?
So they banned it.
Is it
so
because
it was banned from Germany's education. So these generations, it's never been a part of what they remember. It's never been included. It's not what they know. And they're at every European country's at economic stagnation point. So the young kids are graduating. There aren't any jobs. They're barely surviving on what exists of the social welfare system. They're desperate and they're tired of being beat down. They see who's to blame because the low-wage jobs are going to the immigrants that are allowed to come in and take the jobs they actually wouldn't take. But it gives them an easy scapegoat, and they want to feel good again. People want to feel good in times where they're told there isn't a bright hope.
I guess it's why I look at Trump, and I don't understand Trump at all.
Right.
But then when I look around and I see people that support Trump, if you go to a Trump rally or you have friends that support Trump, you don't understand how they can come to that conclusion, but I guess you can kind of get it.
Oh, yeah, because I mean, American politics is to identify a group of middle-income, middle-aged voters that remember an easier time or are looking for a time when they were great, and then to tell them who's to blame for their lot in life and to organize them into a voting unit and say, this is how we fix it. We build a wall, we deport, we all of a sudden those jobs are open for you and you've got a bright hope.
Yeah, because to me, the fact that there will be, like, the whole notion of rebuilding the middle class is silly to me. Because that's built on an America that doesn't exist anymore.
It's a global world.
The world is now built on freelancing. You know, I don't expect that I will ever work. I work in a creative industry. I work in a creative job. You know, so we're kind of on the curve.
Of the information economy.
Of the information economy. And so I don't expect that I'll ever work for a corporation that I don't directly control that's an S corporation ever again. And I think you start to see that you see people leave accounting firms and become consultants. And so everything's, people leave their job and they become consultants for Allison's Transmissions. You know, and that's one of the reasons the tax code has to be radically changed is because the economy is going to change.
Yeah, but it's, that explains the rise of the movement, because if you look at Donald Trump, he's pro-union, he's pro-economic stability and the ability to buy a home and do these things. And if you look at Germany, it's the problem with the welfare state.
Sure.
They had early access in Britain. That's what killed it. Because going back to the 80s and Margaret Thatcher, what you had in the conservative movement was a small group of American-style Tea Partiers. You had a group of people who wanted it to be a litmus test on whether or not you'd remain in the economic or the EU. Today, we're seeing the birth of that, where that's the majority of the UK Conservative Party. So it's like when in 2010, when you had a Tea Party absolute takeover, these people you're not able to really negotiate with them because they've wanted something and been ignored so long, they're going to hold the party hostage, and you just hope to God you don't get to a point democratically where they take over.
Sure. Okay. Joe, any other questions on the Brexit? Do we have any questions from the audience? Do any of you want to come up and ask a question that on the Brexit that you've heard tonight? All right, the live show is just a myth. There's really not a crowd here. We just made it all up. George, did you raise your hand?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you're a libertarian. Come on up here. We know you want to talk.
We love liberty.
George, you're a... All right. Calm down. It's
honestly,
just George Edwards, everybody. George, tell people your podcast, by the way. You're a podcaster.
Oh, yeah, it's the George Edwards Show. It's very narcissistic and all that. But
listen, don't say that. Let's download the Chris Spangle Show. So go ahead, ask your question.
Well, I don't know much about Brexit, but I do know that if you lower transaction costs in economies across border, like the United States, for example, has no transaction or very little transaction costs over borders, and that's probably the most important part of why we thrive. But do you think Brexit is negative or positive when it comes to transaction costs for Britain relative to other countries?
We're not sure yet, because here's the other little wrinkle to it, is the head of the European Union, the Belgian president, actually, they're not bound by a referendum. It's just a popular vote, but a parliament isn't bound by it. So there's still a chance that a new parliament after the election could say, well, we're no longer bound by that because we were elected to govern. And I doubt that would happen. But the case is with Britain is they're just big enough they'll be able to dictate terms. It's that this is like negotiating a two-year divorce, but it's going to take 2 years and there's a whole – but you have to do it with 27 countries. So it could get so bogged down on the weeds on a country-by-country basis depending on their exports and what kind of products they offer. But I think it's 45% of the European Union actually imports from Britain and is dependent upon the products they import. So they're going to be able to dictate terms. It's a question of this could take 10 years. And so there's just not enough information to know what the transaction costs will be.
That's scary for the UK just because of its NHS systems and its council house systems. There's like a large minority of people that live in council houses which are afforded to by the UK government. And with the NHS, it's exploded to a point. Like that's
it's where unsustainable.
We hear about the things where like, oh man, I had to wait like 7 years to get a surgery. They're talking about the NHS. They're not talking about all the other socialist countries in the EU. They're talking about the NHS, which is in England.
Right.
If you've got a question or comment, go ahead and line up over there behind Lucy.
Not necessarily a question, but
I didn't think you had a question. I know you're a libertarian, so you had more of a comment that you were going to ask a question that everyone needed to be informed upon, even though you already know the answer.
Yes, yes.
I know the deal.
Peasants, you're welcome for me talking.
I call it the Tim McGuire.
I don't know. I know the Tim McGraw. I don't know who that is. My point was that... It's a good point. Transaction costs. I think the point is, the one of the major things that's going to help out Britain with leaving the EU, in, as far as economics is concerned, is because the EU is more or less it's like NAFTA. It's a free trade zone, right? You know, it's a free
It's a freedom zone.
When in reality, what they mean is that they're going to pass regulations that apply to all of these countries equally, and you have
like
no
TPP.
Choice in the matter. So you can't say, well, I'm going to not do this tariff because I don't want to, you know, hurt my economy with this tariff, and then another country is going to be like, well, that's not fair, because you all have to do it if you're in the EU. So the benefit of not having to follow said restrictions of being in this universal regulation zone, I think, would offset any type of, you know, on like de jure tariffs or anything that would exist across borders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, me personally, and I know I'm not up
it's
here.
It's because their size, they dictate the terms.
Yeah, I know I'm not up here to ramble like I always do and yell a lot, but I think this is a unit. This is an undoubtedly good situation for Great Britain to be in because they're basically taking control of themselves. I mean, as libertarians, we're always supporting of self.
As Americans, we all support a good Brexit.
As we always support self-government and decentralization, and all we can hope is that hopefully the United Kingdom becomes the dis-United Kingdom and turns into a bunch of different little states. You know, it can only go from there. But I think
hopefully no war.
All right, Creighton,
we can hope.
Creighton Harrington, everybody.
Yeah,
it would be a Brexitist, right? That's what I wanted to
so,
say.
So Lucy Brenton, she is running for
Senate.
Step up to the red knight, the United States Senate here in Indiana.
I can't wait for you to beat Todd Young.
I know.
I can't wait to beat Todd Young's ass either.
Todd Young is the worst.
Did you know he was a Marine?
You know, that is like the only thing.
You know who is worse than Todd Young? Baron Hill. So
I met Baron Hill in person because he'll actually come to events. And he was very kind to me. But that Todd Young guy, I mean, he's a Marine, and that's all we know.
And he just
and you know there are two types
people.
Of Marines, right? There's like the smart ones, and then there's
just
the dumb
send
ones.
One of us in.
And I think he's one of the dumb ones.
So you have a website, I presume, or a Facebook, or how can people get in touch
yeah,
with you?
Yeah, of course they can go to lucyforsenate.com, and I also blog at irefusetocomply.com.
All right.
That's just the kind of gal I am.
What is your Brexit question?
Well, you know, I'm always looking for the angles, and I'm wondering what you think about investments. You see gold and silver is very volatile right now, and I'm wondering if maybe I should just buy up all the Toblerone and sell it to you.
Food insurance is my personal strategy. I have several pounds of chocolate in my home. That is the only investments I'm good at, so I'll leave it to James Neese. Tell us your portfolio strategy, sir.
Well, since I've been reading a lot of the tweets with like a bunch of people going, oh, I might, you know, outside, you know, like mosque and stuff, I'm investing in bacon because it's going to be a lot of fucking hate crime this next couple weeks.
What do you think, Greg?
I would think that this is right now is a market correction for the British pound,
mm-hmm.
and so I wouldn't get too freaked out. I would probably buy and dollar cost average down, and then if we know anything, it's that we're not going to let one of the centers of global economic finance collapse. So it's like Goldman Sachs going down to $5. Buy as much as you can and ride it back up.
Listen, take the Chris Spangle. This is free advice. This is for you, Christy. You want to buy high and sell low. Okay? All right. Dan Church. Dan, you have a question?
I heard some information on the deal Switzerland has with the EU, and it's completely different. And what was described, they pay almost nothing to be a member per citizen. So I mean, there's a precedent already for what England's after.
Like this.
Oh,
there you go.
There's a precedent already for what England's after, and I think that's the deal they're trying to get.
Oh yeah,
it's way better than what the rest of the countries are paying.
Yeah, the 350 currently and the 3500 is like a theoretical. It's the one that would exist like if you followed the letter of the law, but they'll never have to pay that.
Yeah, well, I think that number five. $5 or £5 is what I had read.
Yeah,
about Switzerland's
yeah,
deal.
That's their per household.
You keep saying Switzerland, but I keep hearing annex a rightful German state.
All right, thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the myth, the man, the legend, the most valuable player of We Are Libertarians, Mr. Harry Price.
Woo!
Back from Pork Fest, yes, and not a moment too soon.
Yep, arrived just in time to ask my question.
Harry came over to my place. We got a few computers donated. Harry came over, graciously donated his time, teared them all apart, and then left for a week and a half.
Yeah. I left you with one running, you know, and then took the rest of them.
I broke it.
Oh. Oh, well, damn.
But I have a lot of toys for you to play with. Harry, so we'll talk to you. He has a special podcast that he recorded with our friend Roger Paxton and Seth Nimone.
And Josh Jarvis, author of Anarchy in New England, great book. Go
so we up. we will load up that special Pork Fest episode coming soon, thanks to Mr. Harry Price.
Yep.
So Harry, ask your question.
My question is, with the momentum gathered from the Brexit and possibly the Texas or the NH exit, is there an index Indiana exit from the union?
Should we secede from the union?
I think that's well established that that's not allowed.
Yeah, I know.
600,000 Americans died.
Paul Copeland, come on over.
Somebody in the back noticed my Illuminati ring, and they're freaking out back there.
Mason.
Paul?
All right, so I know with all the talk of the pound and the value of the euro and the pound going up and down, I know some of our hosts here are very interested in monetary policy, specifically the Canadian dollar. How has that been faring, Spangle?
You know what's funny? Is their Secretary of State is still the Queen to this day.
I'm the Secretary. Secretary, you're kicking your ass if you'll put that microphone and go sit back down in your seat.
Is he going back?
Oh, he's going to be not even catapult. What was the really big one?
Oh,
trebuchet.
No, we're not.
Trebuchet.
Never Bittner.
You're not coming up here. Not until we have Christy. So let's wrap up on the Christy, come up here. I want you to stand, right? Little Brett Bittner, come back up here. Stand up right here. Stand up on stage so everybody can see the most obnoxious shirt. Yeah. There you go. Try to get up front here if you can. Can you, like, crawl under there?
There you go.
Yeah. Look at this. Get your big, fat, Bittner head out of here. We already got one. We don't need you. Get out of here. So we need a full Bittner. Go down there and get full
Never
Bittner.
Go full Bittner.
Never go full Bittner. So Brett Bittner designed...
This what is... Wait, whoa. This is...
Go down there.
This is quickly becoming a Democratic sit-in.
So Brett Bittner decided that what America needed was a Brett Bittner t-shirt.
Absolutely.
With the biggest face of Brett Bittner he could possibly have. Biggest one.
I had to represent how big my head is.
Oh, and it's enormous. You have no idea, people.
And I hear that little Brett Bittner is presenting a $1,000 check tonight to We Are Libertarians.
No.
Congratulations.
But
it's going to be untraceable Bitcoin, I'm sure.
Doge.
Yeah, Dogecoin. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Jeremiah, you stay right here. Thank you, Christy.
I want to point out that since they're all in red and she's wearing a beret, like, I'm getting triggered as fuck.
Yeah.
I think there are some commies here, and I'm going to physically remove like 5 minutes.
So to speak.
So to speak.
You have to understand, Christy Avery is like the sweetest human alive.
Yes.
And you don't realize it until you really are. There's a podcast, a little podcast, some might say the greatest podcast, called The Chris Spangle Show. And episode 2 was Christy Avery. I allowed Christy, our only super fan, to have my address and come into my home. Fortunately, no pieces of wood were tied to my legs and sledgehammers hit to them. But just a great, great Great 40-minute chat with Christy. She's awesome. And thank you, Brett Bittner, for coming up with the T-shirts and donating a good chunk of change. I just have to ask, Jeremiah, why do you always tuck your shirts in? Like, let it loose, bro.
He's picking on you.
I don't know. I think you... I'm getting.
You drive all the way from Newcastle, and this is what you get.
I'm getting.
I got a gubernatorial candidate to pick me up at my house to bring here to me today.
What? I know.
For you to pick on me.
I'm just hearing that Jeremiah is quite the ladies' man.
You never know.
You never know. Let's get your gubernatorial candidate up here.
Come on up here, Rex.
So,
niece, do you mind letting Rex Bell have a seat?
Let's do it.
Get out of here.
I hate you too, Spangle. Fucking shitlord.
All right, get out of here, James. We don't need you anymore. Ladies and gentlemen, James Neese.
Give James a round of applause.
Only on We Are Libertarians would you follow James Neese with Rex Bell. There have never been two more different people in the world. Rex, how are you doing?
Well, I was all right. Now I'm kind of confused.
Okay, put that mic right up here for me, though.
Well, I came in here and we were talking about a Buddha tattooed to a woman's breast.
Right.
We went straight into the British
exit,
leaving the European Union.
Right.
And then I ended up taking financial advice from a man that ate out of a dumpster. So, I said, I just drove 60 miles here to learn something, and I've got to sort all this out.
You went on two trips tonight. How's the campaign going?
It's great. Been busy. We ran all over the state last week and all weekend.
You were in Huntington for the parade? Is that right?
No.
That was 2 weekends ago?
Johnson County. We were in Huntington, yes, the week before. We were at Wayne County Fair, the Rush County Fair, Marion County Meet and Greet, the Greenwood Freedom Festival.
Holy cow.
White County Meet and Greet. I've met with some farmers.
I thought you were
going to
run a low-energy campaign.
This was supposed to be a low-energy campaign.
Your campaign manager is the worst.
He is awful. He is awful. He's a slave driver.
I know.
Yeah. See,
not
what
libertarian at all.
See, when people used to... Uh-oh, Tony Styles is leaving. I was going to have him up next. All right, Rex, I'm like, Rex isn't going to run a low-energy campaign. He can't do that. It's not in his DNA. He just talks slower than
Nothing
the rest of us.
Nothing wrong with those hands.
Right.
That's what my wife said.
He has big hands.
They're huge.
Yes. It's from swinging his large hammer, okay? He is a
be nice.
He is a contractor by trade. He is a small business owner. He is the author of Stinky Shorts, which you can... Get a copy at stinkyshorts.com, right?
You certainly can.
Yeah, and it's
while they last.
It is a great, great book. I want to do an audio book of it as soon as, you know, you quit this gubernatorial nonsense. But can't you commit more time to me, Rex?
I know. I've neglected you, and I feel bad about that. I thought about that today, and I wept openly.
You know, who's to say that freedom is more valuable than Chris Spangle? Right. There's no way. You know,
it's true. So what are you hearing? So you're running against Mike Pence and a guy named John Gregg, but Mike Pence is, you know, one of those guys that everybody in the conservative movement really thinks is, oh, he's Mr. Conservative, but he's made a lot of missteps. I mean, what are you hearing in your race out there as you talk to people?
A lot of disappointed people, you know. Pence is a Republican in Indiana. You know, he's got that going for him, and a lot of years that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I don't think it will be. There are a lot of people that from the Republican Party that support so much of what he's done economically, but he's finally crossed the line, I think, a lot on a lot of the social issues people are upset about. I said the first person that asked me to run for office was a Republican office holder mm-hmm. in Wayne County. He said, you know, we just can't vote for Pence. Would you please run? Because there's no way in hell we can vote for a Democrat.
Sure.
You know, this, and we're counting on a lot of that. People are just so disappointed. We're going to see it at the national level. We're going to see it down at the state. People that are so ingrained in their party, there's no way they can cross over to the old parties, vote one or the other.
Sure.
But I think they'll welcome a libertarian, especially when we get a chance to present our case to them.
Especially because John Gregg's no choice at all.
Oh, And I've said many times about him, you know, people like some of his issues now, but we don't know which way the wind's going to be blowing in 2017, and that's when it
we'll
can change.
We'll have to take a poll, and he'll tell us.
Well, he'll tell us, but he'll have to take a poll first before he can tell us.
How do you think that the Johnson-Weld ticket, you're a down-ballot race from the presidential race, gubernatorial race?
I think we
can
help him.
So how do you think that they can help you, or is it the other way around?
Traditionally, you know, it's been the other way around.
All right.
When we have a good county race, the lower ticket pulls the national ticket up.
Coattails.
You don't see that. You know, we're reverse coattails in the Libertarian Party, and I don't see any reason that that would change now. I still think we need to depend a lot on our local candidates, our small candidates. You know, I think Johnson and Weld will do very well, but I think they'll do better where we have strong local candidates.
All right. Well, thank you, Rex. You've got several lovely T-shirts. They're much nicer than Never Bittner. And people.
Has he negatively affected your campaign?
Well, we know we didn't want to bring that up, but I'm glad you did.
He's going to cost you 5 points alone, guaranteed.
We have some T-shirts here, like you say, stinky shorts we've got here.
Yep.
We got some bumper stickers. We've got a website, electrexbell.com. You can go in there and order all sorts of neat swag. We have on Facebook.
So listen, we're a national show, but if you're in an area with a libertarian campaign that you just don't feel is cutting it, or you don't have one in your area, and you're not necessarily all that into the Johnson campaign.
You're not feeling the Johnson.
Check out Rex Bell's campaign at electrexbell.com and check him out. I can tell you he has the We Are Libertarians seal of approval. Stinky Shorts is one of the
whether
best.
Whether you want
books.
It or not.
Yeah. Let me take that back. We disavow Rex Bell completely.
Vote for Mike Pence.
We would never support Rex Bell, and neither would he support us.
So. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much, Rex. Thanks. Everybody give Rex a round of applause.
Do you know that yesterday I had a conversation on Facebook with Mike Pence's campaign manager?
You did? Tony, come on up.
Someone asked, what do you think of Mike Pence going into this November? And I said, I'm voting for Libertarian Rex Bell. And then his campaign manager chimed in and said, why is that, Joe? What is it about Mike Pence that you don't like? And so I gave him my laundry list. And after I gave him my laundry list, his only response was, well, that was a very well-reasoned argument. Nice talking to you.
Mr. Tony Styles joins us. Mr. Tony Styles is a... Sorry to step on your applause break, brother.
That's all right.
So we talked to you a couple episodes ago, and you were talking about ending human trafficking with your organization, which is what?
It's the Arrows Foundation.
All right, Arrows Foundation.
Yep, it's freedomarrows.org is where you go for that. It's an organization that's trying to end human trafficking through free market solutions.
All right, and... we talked on Monday. You had not a money bomb, but something like that.
Yeah, kind of like that.
How did that go?
It went well. What it is an ongoing thunderclap. What they do is you can join our thunderclap. You can still do it because it goes off. What happens is it's kind of like a big flash mob. If you join up and join the thunderclap for Arrows Foundation, what happens is on one day, all of a sudden at the very end of the campaign, it goes out on all your social media with all the hashtags that lead people to the website and what needs to be done to support a cause. So it's like a giant flash mob all at once, just like a thunderclap. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of what your work is and why it's important?
Sure. What we're doing is, I got back from Cambodia about 6 months ago, and I was doing some work. And I had worked in the anti-trafficking industry after college. And when I got done, it was a hard situation. My dad had passed away, and I had to do adult things and not focus on the whole charity thing that I wanted to do with my life, which I have the luxury to do now, and I'm very happy about that. But I came back from Cambodia because the time was up, and it was time to come home, and I ran the Austin Peterson campaign, and the campaign was over, and I told Austin ahead of time, right when we started, is if you get the nomination or not, if you get the nomination, I'm not the right guy to run a campaign. You need a professional at that point. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
But
he's like asking one of us to run a campaign.
Yeah,
I still think there's room for a meme political strategist.
Yeah, it was a very meme, dank memes and live streams. all that was. And we put a hell of a show on. It was pretty good. But when it was over, and he knew that no matter what happened, I was going to go back and start doing work. And my plan is, and still is, and I'm going to, we have everything in place. I'm going off to South Africa and then Sierra Leone. There's a slight chance I'll be able to get a visa for Iraq for a short period. And also, I know that's going to be a rough one. And then there's Romania, Guernsey, a couple places along the way. I'll be back in about 3 months starting after July. I'll be gone doing some work. But the organization, what we do is we provide these other organizations with the means to be self-sufficient, to actually do what they're supposed to do, to be an organization. Organizations aren't run on rainbows and happiness and sunshine. They're run on money and just like a business. It's a business, and you have to know how to run a business. And a lot of people don't realize that. So we're going into these other countries and showing them this is how you are supposed to do it, so you can actually make a difference instead of just being, having wishful thoughts. By doing so, we're creating a giant network of anti-human trafficking organizations that will be able to work with each other across borders all across the world. And if, for those of you that don't know about what human trafficking is, it's not like drug trafficking. I mean, I assume most people here are libertarians. It's
very pro.
Please
drug
expound on that.
Yeah. Right, like
it's not like drug trafficking where it's like, you traffic drugs. Yeah, that's fine. Drugs. Yeah,
James was a mule in Mexico for a few weeks, it's fine.
Not a big deal. People, what you put in your body is your own business.
Right.
But with human trafficking, it's a totally different thing. So people get the trafficking thing mixed up. With human trafficking, we're talking about people that are actually put into slavery, that are unwillfully put in there. They are indentured servants and slaves, and a lot of them in the worst possible situation that you can possibly think of, where they're stolen out of their parents' homes and they are 10, 11, 12 years old, sometimes younger, that are forced to do sexual acts for, a dollar a piece, and they have to go through about 20 a day. And that's a reality in the world, and people don't hear about that because the media doesn't want to sell, they can't sell. Whenever something uncomfortable comes on, you turn the channel. It's like the Sarah McLachlan, the Arms of the Angels thing.
Right,
everybody turns the channel immediately.
Music, the music is in their eyes right now, Tony.
Exactly.
It's like why the Iraq War had theme music instead of pictures of bodies coming home.
Exactly. Right. People don't want to see that, so they turn the channel, and so they can't sell advertising if that's going on, so they don't talk about it. But it's the second largest illegal industry behind drug trafficking, which, I don't think should be illegal. Personally, but so as far as libertarians go, it's the number one threat in the world, and we're talking about slavery, actual freedom issues, which is a very libertarian issue. I don't know about you, but I really think it is. So we're dealing with that, and there's situations that are a little less savory where I go in and I do a little things that are kind of blurred lines as far as what's legal. Well, not blurred lines; they're very illegal. Some of the things that I do when I go there to get some of these kids out in some of those countries, but it's important to be aware that this kind of thing is going on. And the free market solution to that, outside of the little pieces of anarchy and anonymous things that I do, to realize that we can make a difference in this whole thing simply by helping out on social media, because on social media you can put things out. And our Arrows Foundation and our Facebook page has been growing exponentially over the past couple weeks. Twitter, same thing, and the Thunderclap is just going to add to it. And we have Gary Johnson is going to be joining us on Thunderclap. I just talked to him today. Adam Kokesh, he's already part of our Thunderclap. Julie Borowski, and you guys have yet to do it, so whatever. But
we want you to be able to raise money.
Greg, I put him in charge of that.
Volunteering.
But that's what's going on, and we've been accepting donations for exactly a week as of right now, and we've been able to collect goods and funds exceeding $1,000 at this point, which in 1 week of having donations brought in, that's pretty amazing. And today I was out. You guys know about the whole mayor conference that's going on here that's causing traffic jams and all that downtown. I walked into that with I don't like to say people's names when I know that things are going on. We'll call him Brad Antelope. So I went with him out there, and for some reason they gave us credentials. I don't know why and shit, but they thought it was a good idea to give us credentials to get into this thing. And Gary Johnson was showing up, and we brought him in, and he gave a decent speech. I'm a recovering Johnson supporter that's become a Johnson addict once again. And it was good to sit down with him after if it was all over and he gave his speech. I got to sit down. Gary doesn't eat lunch. I don't know. It's some kind of dietary thing. I understand. But he and I, we sat down, and while we're sitting there, I'm telling him about what's going on, and he's telling me about what's going on. We've known each other for years. And while we're sitting there, this strange man walks up, and he's wearing these beautiful cufflinks, and they have the presidential seal on them. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm eyeballing this. He has a really nice watch. He's wearing a nice tie. I can recognize good clothes. I this guy's on the level. And he starts talking to us, and he says, you know, do you mind if I sit down? And we're like, oh, sure. And he introduces himself, and he says, my name's Frank Biden. I'm Joe Biden's younger brother. I'm like, well, that's interesting. You know,
where's your Camaro?
I know. And he's talking, he's telling me about his charity, and then Gary jumps in and says, well, Tony has a charity that he just started, and he's doing anti-trafficking work, and it's, you know, frontline stuff. Gary's exact words were like, it's really frontline shit, Frank. And Frank looks over and he says, well, tell me about it. And I told him about it, and he says, you know what? I'll write you a check for $1 million.
Nice.
Wow. You got it?
I'm following that guy to the end of the earth to collect that fucking check.
That's amazing.
I mean, if you got the check on you right now,
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess
who would take a signed over check from $1 million if they knew libertarians were involved?
I know. Yeah,
well, that's great. So tell people again how they can support you.
It's freedomarrows.org is where you go, and it's going to a good cause, and we're going to be live streaming from all these places that I'm going on Facebook. You'll be able to see it. A lot of people have donated, and you know, being here in Indiana, the love that I've seen just come from Indiana itself through Thunderclap and through our donations is amazing. I think Bittner gave Bitcoin.
Nice.
Bittner coin. Yeah. Bittner coin.
Yeah. Which is awesome. So yeah, thank you guys. I've been here for a couple weeks being in Indiana, and I absolutely love it. And you guys have just been fantastic. I see a lot of people. I didn't realize there were so many people that I knew online that were from Indiana. And,
yeah. We'd have nothing to do here.
I know.
We have nothing but eat and go to things.
Like, we go to Don Pablo's and we talk about liberty.
Yeah. So, all right, thank you, Mr. Tony Styles.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Best of luck.
All right, so we gotta start wrapping up. We gotta finish this. We gotta land this bird, Joe Ruiz. So we're gonna give you the opportunity to have the. For those of you who don't know, at the end of the show, we give everybody a chance to wrap up, say something they didn't get to say, you know, talk for the first time in the podcast, self-promote. I don't know if you're good at that, Joe.
I don't want to self-promote. I want to say, if you have not bought some food tonight, the food here is fantastic,
yes.
Very reasonably priced. Make sure you serve your, or tip your servers well. I recommend the burritos. They were awesome. Anybody get the taco bowl? Yeah, you love Hispanics. Oh. And
the tachos, by the way, Christy knows about them tachos. The burrito is great. I mean, and I haven't put them on the grill for like a couple. It was the best. Yeah.
It was
burrito.
So good.
I'm not even saying that.
So get some and be generous to Lucy and Rex and to Tony
and Paul Copeland, who's also running for Township Advisory Board.
A lot of candidates.
And before all that, make sure you treat Morty's well because they treat us well.
Yep. And dear leader. We'll be serenading you with Bohemian Rhapsody when we do live karaoke at 9 o'clock. So stick around. Grab a few more beers, drink, eat, and be merry. Go ahead, Greg.
I don't have anything other than I echo what Joe said, and it's great to see you, brother. And thank you all, one, for coming out, because I realize it is a Monday night. You're all very busy, and you could...
Yeah, Joe. We knew Brett Bittner was going to be the answer when Brett Bittner asks a question. Brett just traveled from D.C., and thank you for flying in and coming
that
in.
That doesn't count.
I know it doesn't count. You flew home. Shut up. I know.
That is untrue.
We love you, buddy. James is from another planet, Brett. Shut up.
Yeah.
What, bro? Thank you guys for coming out. I thought this would be, I didn't think anybody was coming tonight. But
you did put like an emotional, I need this video on Facebook.
Listen, it's been a long month, people. I need attention. Nothing, I need validation.
Nothing boosts turnout like attempted suicide on Facebook Live.
Single Spangled needs lots of attention, don't you understand? All right. Thank you all for joining us. So we appreciate it. If you are listening online, this is the kind of quality entertainment that you get from We Are Libertarians Live.
Quality.
The last time you're going to hear it in the feed, you've got to become a premium member. Look for it soon. Once it's out, we'll launch it. $5, $10, $25, $800 a month.
Assuming we are able to generate demand.
Well, there's demand. Trust me. I mean, there's demand for you. Me, not as much. But
I doubt that.
Everybody wants Greg Lenz.
That's not true. Those are my sock accounts.
Oh, Christy Avery wants some Chris Spangle. All right. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you. And as always, we promise
to do better next time. Thank you, guys.
Hey, guys. Hi. It's me. Again. Yeah. I'm asking for money again. I don't like doing it. I don't. It's not like I sit here and think, oh man, I want to beg people to give us their hard-earned money. Money that they go out and they work at boring jobs all day for. You know, I know that asking you for $5, $10, $800 a month is a lot. And I know that you have a lot of options out there. You could give $5 a month to We Are Libertarians, or you could give it to, like, I can't even think of anything else that you would want to give it to, honestly. I mean, I consider us half as valuable as Netflix. So We Are Libertarians, like, according to the stock market, is worth, like, billions. They just haven't heard about it yet, which is why we need advertising. So that's why I need you. To please go to wearelibertarians.com, scroll down in the sidebar, make a monthly or a one-time contribution through PayPal, sign up per episode on Patreon. We're going to take that money and we're going to do stuff with it. Not like hookers and blow stuff. We already have a slush fund for that elsewhere. The Cokes send us that money. This is going to go to Facebook advertising and other forms of advertising to grow listenership to the show so more people can learn about libertarianism. Think about it. How did you learn about libertarianism? Was it us? Did you get involved in libertarianism because of us? If you did, then it means something to you. You'd miss us when we were gone. It's not a threat. It's just I'm saying, you'd miss us if we were gone. So, please, wearelibertarians.com, make a contribution. The more contributions we get, the less of these there will be. That was a threat. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at wearelibertarians.com.